ജയരാധമാധവ കുഞ്ചബിഹാരി ജയരാധമാധവ കുഞ്ചബിഹാരി ഗോപീജനവല്ലഭ ഗിരിവരധാരി ഗോപീജനവല്ലഭ ഗിരിവരധാരി യശ്വദാനന്ദന ബ്രജഗണരംഗന യശ്വദാനന്ദന ബ്രജഗണരംഗന യാമുന തീര വനസാരി ീരാവനചാരി ജയരാധമാധവ കുഞ്ചബിഹാരി ഗോപീജനവല്ലഭ ഗിരിവരധാരി ഗോപീജനവല്ലഭ ഗിരിവരധാരി ശരാനന്ദന ബ്രജഗണരംഗന ശരാനന്ദന ബ്രജഗണരംഗന യമുന തീരാവനചാരി ീരാവനചാരി ജയരാധമാധവ കുഞ്ചബിഹാരി ജയരാധമാധവ കുഞ്ചബിഹാരി ഓം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ ദേവരാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരസ്തു ശ്രീ ശ്രീമദേശി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി പ്രഭുപാദ കീ ജയ ഗ്രന്ഥരാജ ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതം കീ ജയ നിതായ ഗൗര പരമാനന്ദേ ഹരി ഹരി ബോ സമവേത ഭക്ത വൃന്ദ കീ ജയ ആദയ ശ്രീ സമദ്ഭവതി ആദയ ശ്രീ സമദ്ഭവതി ആദയ ശ്രീ സമദ്ഭവതി ആദയ ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു ഗൗരാംഗ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ നമോ Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, where Krishna shows the universal form, text number 51. Tata, thereafter, Bhakti Bhagavati. Is this the right one? Yeah. The cult of Bhakti, devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Putri Bhute, in the Lord who had appeared as the son of Mother Yashoda, Janardana, in Lord Krishna, Dampatyo, of both husband and wife, Nitaram, continuously, Asit, there was, Gopa Gopishu, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the Gopas and the Gopis, associating with Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda and following in their footsteps, Bharata, O Maharaj Parikshit. Tato Bhakti Bhagavati Putri Bhute Janadane Dampatyo Nitaranasi Gopa Gopi Shubharata. Tato Bhakti Bhagavati Putri Bhute Janadane Dampatyo Nitaranasi Gopa Gopi Shubharata. Tato Bhakti Bhagavati Putri Bhute Janadane Dampatyo Nitaranasi Gopa Gopi Shubharata. Translation. Thereafter, O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Bharatas, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead became the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they maintained continuous, unswerving devotional love and parental affection. And in their association, all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, the Gopas and Gopis, developed the culture of Krishna Bhakti. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Although when the Supreme Personality of Godhead stole the butter, curd, and milk of the neighboring gopas and gopis, this teasing superficially seemed troublesome. In fact, it was an exchange of affection in the ecstasy of devotional service. The more the gopas and gopis exchanged feelings with the Lord, the more their devotional service increased. Sometimes we may superficially see that a devotee is in difficulty because of being engaged in devotional service, but the fact is different. When a devotee suffers for Krishna, that suffering is transcendental enjoyment. Unless one becomes a devotee, this cannot be understood. When Krishna exhibited his childhood pastimes, not only did Nanda Maharaja and Yashoda increase their devotional affection, but those in their association also increased in devotional service. In other words, persons who follow the activities of Vrindavan will also develop devotional service in the highest perfection.
Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Yato Bhaktir Bhagavati Putri Bhute Janardane Dampatyo Mutaramasi Gopa Gopishu Bharata.
Thereafter, O Maharaj Pariksit, best of the Bharatas, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead became the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they maintained continuous unswerving devotional love and parental affection. And in their association, all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, the gopas and gopis, developed the culture of Krishna bhakti. You've been hearing some background here about how the Drona and Bhara became Nanda and Yashoda. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives some clarification. He says that they practiced devotional service, sadhana, for a long time, and then they were able to get Krishna as their son. So then they merged into, or somehow combined, with Nanda and Yashoda, who are the original parents of Krishna. And so now they're also taking part in these wonderful leelas of the Lord. The Prabhupada begins his purport here by describing how these things we've been hearing about, some of the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram, that appeared troublesome to the residents of Vrindavan, but we shouldn't think the residents of Vrindavan were suffering because of this. So I thought this was an interesting example, because when you think of suffering, we don't think that they were suffering very much just because Krishna came and stole a little bit of butter or yogurt or fed it to the monkeys or whatever. This is generally not what we think about as a form of suffering. But in some sense, we can see it was a disturbance. Krishna and Balaram were creating a disturbance in the neighborhood. And the gopis that were Yashoda's age, contemporaries, they were complaining to Mother Yashoda about Krishna and Balaram's activities. So there was some kind of a disturbance, you can say. So Prabhupada uses this to point out that sometimes it seems that devotees are suffering in their devotional service, but it's not really suffering. There's a nice verse in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Actually, it's in it, just coincidentally, it's in relationship to the Kulavaja Sridhar. Of course, Kulavaja Sridhar, from the external point of view, he appears to be suffering. Because, what does he live on? Some banana bark, and the bark of a banana tree, or banana leaves. And so he has probably nothing, very poor. Even Lord Chaitanya would tease him about his situation. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in commenting on this verse from Chaitanya Bhagavat, it says, Yata deka vaishnavara vyavahara duk nischaya janiya taha paranandu suk. You may, if you look at a Vaishnava, you may think that this Vaishnava is undergoing vyavahara duk, which means ordinary, mundane. Actually, a good translation is, you can say, is mundane. Mundane suffering like everybody else. But nischaya janiha, know for certain
Parānanda sukha. It's actually transcendental happiness that the devotee, even what appears to be suffering, is transcendental happiness. You may remember there's one particular painting of Śrīla Prabhupāda. I think it's the one, or photograph, when Śrīla Prabhupāda, it was in the early, I think that's the one, the first edition of the Bhagavad Gita, the full edition, the Mirand edition, that wonderful picture of Prabhupāda. Or maybe it's, actually that one's a little bit of a profile, maybe it's not that one. But there's another one from around that time that was taken of Śrīla Prabhupāda. And one of the devotees, early devotees, disciples of Śrīla Prabhupāda, was looking at the picture and said, "Prabhupāda, you look so sad there in that picture." Because Prabhupāda, of course, he looked very sober and grave often. And Prabhupāda said, "No, that was transcendental ecstasy." So what we see on Prabhupāda's face may not necessarily be apparent to us what's going on within him. So the devotees are, sometimes it appears to be, the Vaishnavas, Mahabhagavatas, they may appear to suffer like we do. Just like Śrīla Prabhupāda himself, of course, he appeared to undergo so much hardship, and he did undergo great hardship. But because it was a labor of love, then it was ecstasy. When it's connected with bhakti, then it becomes transcendental happiness. We have some mundane parallels, how people get pleasure from difficult tasks, exertions. I just heard about, I think it was some years ago, but there were a couple of men, or two, three men, they jogged all, they ran away all the way across North Africa, something like 5,000 miles, all the way through the Sahara Desert. They ran the whole way. So you can just imagine what a journey that is. Or people climb to the top of Mount Everest, or they do these amazing things. But they feel elation from it. They feel some kind of, you know, it's horrible. Sometimes they almost die. But they feel some kind of pleasure from it, from the suffering. Because they're mind is absorbed in something else. Really, it's about the mind. When the mind is absorbed in something else, then the body can do amazing things. Indriyani pranyahu indriyebhya param manaha. Because the mind is superior to the senses, if we can fix our minds, then the senses can actually do many things. Even things we don't think we can do. Even in our own devotional service, we may think, "Boy, I could never do that." We see the example of some devotee and we think, "Boy, I could never do that." But if the mind, if the conviction is there in the mind, then we can do amazing things for Krishna. We can perform austerities. That's why in the beginning of performing some specific vow, there's a sankalpa. You make your intention known. You say it out loud what you want to do. Then you become more. Like Prabhupada says, if you say, "Today I'm going to fast all day," then you're more likely to do it. Because you said it out loud, you made your intention known. And of course you pray to the Lord, you pray to the acharyas to give you the strength to do it. So the hardship that you undertake, then it becomes satisfying. You have to speak of course, the self-realized soul. Because everything that has a connection with Krishna, then it's transcendental ecstasy. Now, of course, that's the whole nature of the atmosphere in Goloka Vrindavan. It's only ecstasy. It's something that's, for us, very difficult to understand. In fact, we don't understand the other side of it, that this material world is only suffering. That we don't understand either. I was thinking just recently that, I was listening to a lecture by Prabhupada and it sparked this thought, but it's one thing to realize that the world is a place of suffering. That's, of course, something very understood, he says here. That the devotee's apparent suffering is transcendental enjoyment. The separation, of course, this is the emblem of suffering. That's actually ecstasy. The devotee's separation in Goloka Vrindavan. We were just hearing recently where Vasudeva and Devaki, they weren't able to see Krishna's pastimes growing up. But when they were sure that they were able to see him, Krishna was never out of their company, Prabhupada says. And I was thinking, well, actually, sometimes they were. Krishna Balaram are sometimes out of Nanda and Yashoda's company, and then what would they do? They would lament like anything. You can read about this, about Sarva Rasa in the Nectar Devotion. When Krishna Balaram would leave just to go to the forest for the day, then it was like death, practically, for Nanda and Yashoda. They would go mad, say all kinds of crazy things in their ecstasy. But that ecstasy, which looks to us like great suffering, devastation, is one of the ecstatic symptoms, completely devastated. But what is it? It's actually just a matter of intensity. It's an intense, the bhava, the ecstasy becomes intensified by these things. Just as in the material world, we're suffering all the time, because of anxiety at least, bhaya is always present. One of the four characteristics of this material, of material life, material consciousness. So fear is always there. We're always afraid of the future. I know myself, it feels like my mind is always in the future, thinking that this has to be accomplished, or this is happening tomorrow, or this. I was worrying about this, what can happen. There's a quote by somebody, I forget who it was, it says something like, "My life is full of so many tribulations, most of which never happen." So we're always worried about, the worry can be more than the problem itself. So that infects our consciousness in this world. It infects our enjoyment in this world. We can't really enjoy because it's always hovering over us. Of course, the fear of death, ultimately that's what it's about. Fear of our own destruction. Fear of what will happen, what it will inevitably happen. That fear, of course, is warranted in some sense. Because we're attached to this body, we think it will be destroyed. It will be destroyed, ultimately. But there's none of that in the spiritual world. Prabhupada talks about the bliss of Brahmananda, which is not Bhakti-ananda, but just Brahmananda, just realizing aham brahmasmi. There's a kind of bliss, maybe not ananda, but there's a kind of happiness there, just to realize that I will not die. Just this realization is such a relief. So that, of course, is present in the spiritual world. There's no concept of that. Or if there is, somehow, some fear that we may be killed or something by some demon, that also increases transcendental ecstasy. But generally speaking, of course, there's eternity, the existence, the status quo is eternity. Knowledge and bliss. So it's a whole completely different atmosphere, and it changes the whole picture. It's just the opposite of what we experience in this world. So we train ourselves, of course, to understand that consciousness. Not just understand it. We understand it first theoretically, but then we understand it, we grasp it. Graha. We grasp it. And own it. This expression is used today. You have to own it. So we have to own. We have to own our sarup, really, is what it gets down to. It belongs to us. We have to recover it. We have to own it. Recover it. Our original consciousness. Our original Krishna consciousness. It's as simple as that. We can destroy this fear. Shoka moha bhaya apaha. Bhakti. By bhakti. Shoka, moha, bhaya, all these bad things. Shoka, lamentation, moha, illusion, bhaya, fear. Bhakti destroys these things. Clears them away. So that the natural ananda of the living entity can come through. So very fortunate we have this Srimad Bhagavatam given to us by Srila Prabhupada, the Krishna book with Krishna's pastimes. I was thinking of this, you know, they have recordings of Srila Prabhupada dictating the Krishna book. You have heard some of these, the Krishna book tapes. So you listen to Prabhupada and you can hear how his ecstasy coming through. It's actually quite a masterful performance, you think of it, because he didn't just go verse by verse and in a very kind of mechanical, I don't want to use mechanical, but systematic way, verse, word for word, purport, and so on. But you can see when probably the Krishna book, he read two or three verses and think about it, and then sort of paraphrase them and give his own understanding. So it has a real natural kind of flow to it. Srila Prabhupada's own bhakti, his own realizations, his own prema coming through there. So it's very nice to absorb ourselves in that and enter into the mood of Vrindavan Dham. And just as we're getting a glimpse of that today in some explanation by Srila Prabhupada. This verse again, Tato Bhakti Bhagavati Putri Bhute Janadane Dampatyor Mutaram Asid Gopa Gopi Shubharata. Thereafter, O Maya's Pariksit, best of the Bharatas, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead became the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they maintained continuous unswerving devotional love and parental affection. And in their association, all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, the Gopas and Gopis, developed the culture of Krishna Bhakti. This whole point about the association of Nanda and Yashoda too, which I didn't get to, which is another important point here. So, any questions or comments? By now?
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, just a couple of things. One,
the question is, how can the gopas and gopis be increasing in their devotional service? Well, everything is increasing in the spiritual world. That's the nature of spirit. It expands. It doesn't fit within any limit and then become contained there, stop there. But it's ever expanding. A new taste at every moment. So, even though we can, in one sense, we say that it's fathomless or bottomless, the love of the residents of Vrindavan, still somehow it increases in some transcendental way that's inconceivable to us. Of course, another way we can look at this is to say that this is during Krishna's Bhoma Leela, his Leela on earth, that there were some who were coming to the Leela who were coming from not Nitya Siddha, coming from the spiritual world, but coming from this world, Lord Chaitanya, like the rishis from Ramchandra's pastimes, entering into Krishna's Leela at this point. So they're certainly there maturing, advancing in their devotional service. So it could also refer to this. If there are devotees in Krishna's Bhoma Leela, earthly Leela, who are being more and more elevated as a result of their pastime. The Vaishnava Charis explain that when you leave this world, first you go to Krishna's Leela in this world, and then you go back to Godhead, to the spiritual world.
Shelter of that pure love that Krishna is hungry for, and Krishna is the object of that love who wants to enjoy. So that is establishing Vrindavan. So that establishment is, Srila Prabhupada gives it in translation of comparison to ocean, which we explained that there is no bottom, there is no end. And there is a four things happen in the ocean. That one tide comes, Mother Yashoda is thinking, Prabhupada gave an example of Putana. Even the Putana incident took place long time back. But now after 10 years, she's still thinking one day, looking at Krishna, and she saw two things, the new and fresh, never saw within Krishna. And then she thought of Putana, and then another wave comes. So if there is a two or three waves together, then the tide becomes very high. And if the emotion goes in full speed, it becomes so high, and that Mother Yashoda enjoys, she grabs Krishna, and Krishna is wondering what's happening, Krishna also loves that emotion. So both are nourished, even though it was bad, then she's thinking, oh, it was horrible demon. And then she comes at another emotion. But he was playing. Oh, good thing was she was dead. Bad thing was he was still playing with the dead body. So all these emotions coming, and then sometimes another opposition type comes, it crashes down. Sometimes favorable wave comes, it makes it such a wave. So it's eternally forever fresh.
Yes, yeah, so we see how nice this metaphor of the ocean is, because it's an ocean of rasa.
Yes.
So the devotees out there bouncing around in the ocean, mixing with all these, or getting hit by all these rasas, all these different tastes, and there's always something happening. It's endless.
But Prabhupada also said, it was very interesting, I was just putting it there. Another lecture I had, he says, don't stay on the surface. So I was thinking, like, what is he talking about, the surface?
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about Brahmananda, because he mentioned, mm-hmm. Don't stay on the surface. Either swim, or drown, or just go underneath. Very deep. It was very nice.
So what thing reminded me, you mentioned how Prabhupada translated that he would be reading different verses and then he would expound, he would give the, speak into the tape, his translation and realization. And actually, there's a letter by Prabhupada describing the devotees asking, how do we write for BTG? So you're the editor. So I thought it was interesting that Prabhupada said that in this letter, that you study my books and then you explain them in your own words.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a similar thing, that explanation also, both from the point of view of the writer and the reader, becomes very blissful experience.
Mm-hmm. It can be a nice study practice to yourself also. You read the verse in purport, and then you close your eyes and you try to repeat what you just said in your own words. It makes it more memorable that way. And you make sure you understood it. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.